Clearly, it's no secret that I am very adamantly opposed to illegal immigration here in the United States. It's something that I hold near and dear to my heart, possibly because I am an immigrant myself, but also because as an American citizen, I do value our sovereignty. I cherish it. I am not against immigration in general. I believe that we are strengthened by quality immigration. This is what built our country. This is what should continue to build our country. Now, the timing is obviously very poor with coronavirus, with the lockdowns, with the economy in disarray. It's very easy for us to say, you know what, maybe we should just stop immigration altogether. And look, I'm not going to argue against that. It's probably not a good idea for multiple reasons that I'm not going to get into. Actually, we have a guest who's probably going to get into that herself. It's funny because, you know, generally speaking, obviously we get conservatives on this show. That's something that I don't want to make it sound like this is an echo chamber, but frankly, we don't get a whole lot of people on the left who are like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll do your show, no problem. Generally speaking, they tend to avoid doing the show. I don't know why. I don't bite, you know. I'm a pretty nice guy. I've had in the past three interviews, and where I was being interviewed or debated or whatever you want to call it on leftist shows. And the funny part is two of them never ran. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm some master debater and, you know, hey, I owned the libs or lefties or whatever you want to call it. You know, they're drinking leftist tears or I don't know what the I'm not privy to that kind of stuff. Speaking of leftist tears, let me grab a drink of coffee. My throat, it's dry out here. Dry out here in Southern California. But yeah, two of the three quote unquote debates never aired. I wasn't mean, I don't think. They just decided not to have me on. Now, and I mean, well, one of them was an hour and a half recording. I figured surely they can cut out some of it, right? But then I get this Twitter DM saying, hey, we decided that we're just gonna wait a month, and then I check later, yeah, we're just gonna pass. It's like, okay, well, thanks for wasting my time. The one that did air, actually, I didn't even know it did. They buried it. It was pretty funny because whatever. Again, I'm not trying to toot my horn here. That's what it sounds like I'm doing. The point I'm trying to make is that generally speaking, we on the right, if we're doing what we're doing, talking about what we're talking about and having civil conversations about it, we have the winning perspective in a debate format. Yeah, you know, that's I'm sure the left thinks the same thing, but I've seen I could say objectively that when you see left versus right, it's a combination of one side is screaming and the other side is trying to, you know, calmly use logic, facts, truths. That's not all the time. I've seen Alex Jones, who is considered to be on the right, I've seen Alex Jones screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, in quote unquote debates or unfriendly interviews or whatever you want to call them. But, you know, for the most part, we do tend to not try to over, you know, talk over our opposition as a form of trying to win the battle. Yeah. And people, I'm sure I'll get a lot of flack for that. People will say, oh yeah, you haven't seen Bill O'Reilly or Tucker or I don't know. I know that I'm not like that. I know that we're going to have a guest on who is an immigration attorney. She helps people to gain legal status here in the United States. And I imagine I haven't spoken to her ahead of time. So I imagine that it's going to be a lively discussion. You know, we'll probably agree and disagree on certain things, but that's how we roll on this show. So let's first play some music. This show, we always talk about immigration. It's something that comes up as a topic of discussion at least every third or fourth show. And for a very good reason, because it is such an important topic, regardless of your political leanings. You could be left-leaning, right-leaning, immigration and illegal immigration are two extremely important topics, especially now in 2021. To understand it, we usually take it from the political perspective, but there is the human side to it. These are lives. These are people. And we must take that into account, which is why we're very blessed, pleased, and honored to have our next guest. She's a founding member of the Castro Legal Group, a full-service immigration firm. She represents a wide range of clients, including prominent athletes, investors, and others looking to immigrate to the United States. Her website is www.castrolegalgroup.com. We're so happy to have Renata Castro joining us today. Renata, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me speaking on this very important subject.
It is as important as it gets. And we were talking beforehand. You know, I joked around that we could do a 7-hour interview, and you said yes, because not that we're going to. I'm not going to hold you to that, but you did say that we could talk about it forever.
Maybe we can have an immigration marathon on Lifetime TV. They already have 90 Day Fiancé, so it's certainly a subject of interest. I think that if one of the things that's pretty interesting about being an immigration attorney today is that maybe 10, 15 years ago, you would picture an immigration attorney as someone wearing Birkenstocks and living in the woods and not being someone who is on national television and speaking on a matter of interest for everybody. So if there's anything that the current in the past election cycle have done for mere mortals like me who are immigration attorneys, it has made us cool. It has made us talk about things that people want to hear. And you brought up something that I find very the most attractive part of immigration law, and the reason why I went to law school to become an immigration attorney, I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be an immigration lawyer, which is very different, is to be able to tell human stories. And that is the incredible thing about the work that I do. And that's the most powerful thing about immigration law, is how it can shape a better future, not only for immigrants, but for America. So to me, it's the best of both worlds.
Yes, it is. And I don't know if you were aware of this, but I myself am a legal immigrant. So this is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. I'm a huge supporter of legal immigration. I oppose illegal immigration. And that distinction should be made, because I think a lot of times, you know, those of us on the right are often labeled as, oh, you hate immigrants. No. It's we don't hate anybody, generally speaking. I know there are a lot of people who do. But our opposition is generally to illegal immigration. Your expertise is in helping people to instead of me framing it, why don't you tell us what it is that you do and how you do it?
So I wanted to say this, you know, when people say the right hates illegal immigrants, I say that the best way to convert a conservative who hates illegal immigrants to have him fall in love for an illegal alien, it always does the trick. And it happens. It changes the narrative. When we frame the narrative about legal and illegal immigration, oftentimes we don't understand what makes an immigrant out of status or in violation of their status. So the conversation is just a lot broader and in a lot more nuanced than we have time to discuss. So in my practice, I have been fortunate that I have taken a lot of chances as an attorney, because I believe in the law and I believe in the cases that I take, and to represent a wide range of applicants. My practice has a national name in representing victims of human trafficking, victims of domestic violence. And on the other end of the spectrum, I was just working on a case for an alien of exceptional ability who's coming to the United States to develop a business in the oil recycling industry, which is something of great interest to the United States, creates jobs, is, you know, a cutting edge technology. So it's all in a day's work for me. So when we talk about an immigrant and who is an illegal or an undocumented alien and what led him to be there, we need to have a legally knowledgeable discussion of what that is and how that person got there and how the system is actually at times. And I'm not relieving anybody from blame or responsibility. But when we talk about the presence of undocumented aliens, we need to have a dual-sided conversation about their presence in the United States and what keeps them in the United States. and who benefits from that? Because we need to talk about also American businesses who are benefiting from it at scale, right? And how we need to have an immigration policy that fits the United States of today and not the United States of, you know, 70 years ago. 70 years ago is a long time ago. We didn't even have dial-up internet. That's how old 70 years ago is when it comes to policy and when it comes to the movement of people and utilizing legislation to set the United States on a winning path. That's what we Americans like to do. We like to win. That's in our blood. That's in our DNA. How do we win this challenge of immigration, of being at the forefront of technology, of science, of business, by using immigration policy to accomplish that? So it's a quite interesting conversation, to say the least.
We are proud to support a patriotic company that you might have heard of called MyPillow.com and its founder, Mike Lindell. You can support them too by shopping online and using promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, at checkout for up to 66% off. Or call 1-800-862-0382. So head on over to MyPillow.com now or after the show. And again, use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, at checkout to receive your discount.
We have a situation right now. Let's just assume that whether through gun control or through DC becoming a state, or maybe even through immigration directly, let's say that here in the future that the filibuster is removed and Democrats will have at least a year and a half at that point to have total control, carte blanche of exactly how they want to craft the immigration policy in the United States. They'll be able to pass legislation and they have a president who will sign it. In your from your perspective, what does that immigration policy look like? What would most benefit not just, you know, the immigrants, but also, as you put it, America? How does America benefit based upon, let's call it, your ideal immigration legislation plan?
So I hope that you are like, you and I are alike, and I love to fantasize and daydream about how I would spend the lottery money I never won, right? So I think that when I am invited to speculate on what would be the ideal immigration policy, that's like an exercise in winning the human lottery, because I would like to see as many people fulfill their American dream of living in the United States legally. So I want to break down your question in a few points. I think that the Republican Party is going to have a major opportunity to stall the immigration reform until they can get back control of the House in 2 years. And they're going to say, the Democrats promise, but we got it done reasonably, consciously, in a manner that impacts. And that's why my theory that it is the reason behind George W. Bush now all of a sudden having an epiphany and being in every major newspaper painting art that's immigrant related and talking about how he regrets not having passed immigration reform in his government, how the Republican Party needs to change the narrative. So I think that the immigration card is going to be a legacy electoral issue. So every election cycle, someone's going to present a solution or point it as a problem and use it as a way to gain leverage into certain minority groups that are more inclined or not to vote for that candidate. When we talk about immigration reform and we talk about America, we as a country stand to benefit from questionable immigration reform for three reasons. First, we pay a lot in taxes. I don't want to see my tax revenue, or the tax contribution that I make, go into private jails, housing children, and low criminal risk immigrants. Civil arrests in immigration law are incredibly costly. We need to find a way to present an immigration framework that works for the American employer who needs the immigrant labor force. Let's just have a clear conversation. Construction, restaurant, hospitality, certain low-level healthcare positions, or less skilled, I should say, such as caregivers. We all know immigrants are holding these positions. why not make it accessible for them to hold these positions legally for them and for the American employer? We also need to have a conversation about how this doesn't become a problem 10 years from now. Richard Nixon passed the last amnesty. Erase all your violations, green cards to everybody. You're here, you get it. Then Clinton in 1996 passed 245i, Life Act, which if you had an immigrant a job offer, irrespective of how you were in the country, you would get you could get a green card. You paid a fine of $1,000 per family, and the government raised a considerable amount of money at that time. But when W. Bush came into government, that law was shut down. That was right around 9/11. Having said that, we can see how it's a cycle. Every 10 or 15 years, immigration goes back into, you know, becoming a top of mind issue. How do we today design a legislative framework so that you and I can be at a beach somewhere enjoying our lives and not having this repetitive discussion about how do we handle unlawful presence of immigrants in the United States? And thirdly, the government has to think about how do we make it easier for immigrants who are exceptional or excellent in their position to come into the United States in a faster, more productive way. I have clients who are Grammy winners, Latin Grammy judges, who have to wait almost 2 years to arrive in the United States and start contributing to to the economy, to tax revenue producing here. How do we make it more efficient? I know that government and efficiency are not always congruent, but I am a stern believer that the United States is known for its ingenuity and finding solutions in areas where there isn't any immediate alternative. So I think that when we talk about immigration reform, yeah, we can sit here and talk about, do dreamers deserve a green card? Yes, that's unquestionable. Do we need to address the border? That's unquestionable. But how do we address that? And how do we not only look at the tree, but we look at a forest and use this to further the national interests of the United States, not only now, but into the future as well?
Renata, if I'm not mistaken, that third point sounded awfully a lot like a merit-based immigration, legal immigration system that was proposed by the previous president of the United States. That's something that he got panned for a lot, even by many on the right. I personally think that it's wonderful. You know, let's literally bring in the best people. If we're going to bring in, you know, it is a privilege. Well, let's face it. It is a privilege to come to the United States. Not everybody sees it like that, obviously, but I see it like that. And I think that a lot of, you know, millions, maybe billions of people across the country would love that opportunity. And I think that when we can make it to where the best, the neediest and the best come to the United States legally, that we have an opportunity there. But I want to touch on that other point. You represent, like you said, Grammy winners. You represent some of these people who fall into that category. Just out of curiosity, is there anyone that maybe and I'm not very good at pop culture, so you're probably going to stump me, but is there anybody that I would know that you've worked with or have talked to and maybe assisted in getting to the United States?
Well, maybe you are into UFC fighting. I have represented a couple of, you know, UFC fighters, and it was interesting because, you know, here's this guy who is, you know, throwing punches in the ring, and he's all nervous because he's in the presence of a representative of the U.S. government. He was very nervous. And I will never forget this. His name is Adriano. His last name is going to escape me now. And he was very concerned. And I said, in the ring, you fight. Here, I fight. So you need to calm down and let me do my work. And I never forgot that, because all the officers wanted to take photos with him. I've represented soccer players, a lot of people from Brazil, and singers. I have someone who is a sitting judge in the Latin Grammy. We recently won his green card. But, you know, we Brazilians are we're kind of a tight-knit group, and most of my practice has been, you know, representing Brazilians. The great thing is that they always feed me. That's a great thing about ethnic culture. They will always show up with some food, and I never reject that. But it's the cool thing about my job is that at the same time, I have represented, you know, billionaires, individuals who have come out of extreme poverty. I had a client at a point in time who was illiterate. He had someone whom he trusted just to read documents for him. And he had a documentary done on his life because he's a multimillionaire who left jail in Brazil and made something out of himself, like something big. And I am just so in awe of individuals who do that. And I always think, wow, this is the kind of person the United States wants and needs. And I know it's tough to set a moral and a merit compass into speculation, because a lot of us were not meant to be where we are. But what is America, but if not a chance that, you know, a lot of us take into coming into a country, not speaking the language, but learning and working and fighting and making the best of the American dream. I mean, I came here as a girl, and you know, if you told me I would be sitting here on Freedom First Network talking about immigration policy, I'd be like, nah, you're crazy. This is not going to happen. And through a lot of hard work, I was a single mom. I put myself through law school. I have an award-winning practice. I opened a practice right out of law school, and you know, it was a lot of hard work. And that's what America is all about. That's what we've been all about since our inception. And I know that today it's a lot more difficult to ask USCIS officers, that's the immigration agency, to judge people on character. We can't judge the people we marry on character, let alone people coming into the country. But all jokes aside, the United States has to do better so that as an immigration framework, we have to do better, because otherwise we are going to pay a price in the future. The United States is lagging behind in innovation. About 82% of students in the mechanical engineering courses in the United States are immigrants. They are either children of immigrants, which a lot of people will say, you know, they're not immigrants because they were born here. But if you ask my kids, they will tell you they're Brazilian. They're, you know, that's their identity. They're born Americans, but they're Brazilians. But they're either in a small percentile children of immigrants, but in their vast majority, they are first generation immigrants who are into the science, technology, engineering, and math programs that the United States is lagging behind. I don't know if you have children. My 16-year-old doesn't talk about going to college. Oh God, God bless you. Four kids, God bless you. But my 16-year-old doesn't talk about going to college. He wants to be a YouTuber and, you know, all these novel things which kids are talking about today. But when we look at what builds a country, and you know, being a YouTuber is great. If you're, you know, there's plenty of people who are very successful doing that, and it's a lot of work. However, we still need roads built. We need bridges built. We need buildings built, clean, people taken care of. We need doctors, nurses. We have shortage of skilled labor. And I'm not talking about only scientists. The United States has a problem recruiting electricians and plumbers and all these professions, which are high paying jobs, contribute to the economy, have a substantial importance to all of us, have, you know, national importance, but we can't fill those positions. Are we going to wait another 15, 20 years to fulfill the need for these positions? Or are we going to use our strength, our legislative process, to further our interests and make it so that these individuals who have some kind of skill that is of interest to us can come here legally and work and pay taxes and, you know, just make America what it is.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru that are then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
We're on with Renata Castro with Castro Legal Group. You can find her at www.castrolegalgroup.com. You know, we've talked a lot about how to, you know, the legal side of immigration. Let's talk a little bit about, obviously, the border crisis is something that's big. And I know that might not necessarily be your area of expertise, but you do have to weigh in on it, because I'm going to ask you to. I mean, we've seen a tremendous influx of illegal immigration, of caravans, people making this long and, quite frankly, extraordinarily dangerous trek, mostly from Central America. But, you know, and there seems to be no solution, at least not what's being proposed right now. Number one, you know, what do you think of this surge? Do you think that it's a crisis? And then, as the third part of the question, what should be done about it immediately?
I think that the United States needs to design a better asylum policy. So when we talk about a border surge, I have a few personal opinions. If you look historically, there was a dip, but because the United States was breaking its own law. The United States has signed international treatises that say that anyone who's seeking asylum protection of the United States has to either be physically in the United States or present him or herself at a border of American territory. Now, however you got to the United States, if you came in a caravan, if you walked, if you flew, but if you present yourself on a border, you are actually following U.S. law, archaic, outdated, ineffective U.S. law, which says you have to present yourself at a border in order to pursue asylum protection. So when you saw a dip in the number of individuals that were coming in, and you know, with the very questionable MPP program, which kept families in Mexico waiting for asylum. But the problem with that is, if you're an asylum seeker and you've been resettled into a third country, that's not the country where you came from, that actually defeats your asylum claim. So there's just a discussion that needs to be had about not only what's happening in the border today, but also how do we keep it from continuing to happen? In my opinion, the United States should be able to design legislation which allows people who have valid asylum claims to pursue those claims confidentially while in another country. So if they are from Costa Rica or from Guatemala, they can pursue that claim with the American consulate in Guatemala and come to the United States already with their case approved and not have to wait. And if there is an exigent circumstance where lives are at risk, listen, the United States is able to make decisions on a split second. We should be able to design a system where we're not dealing with 14 million undocumented aliens. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to us, because there are resources being applied towards that. There is great uncertainty. Imagine living for 12, 14 years of your life, not knowing if you should buy a house or have a child with your spouse because your immigration case is just taking so long. So in my opinion, there has to be substantive, deep change to the way asylum claims are handled. For those at the border, maybe we should create another rocket docket, which is a faster way to judge cases at the border. But within the United States, following the treatises, listen, we cannot, what's good for the goose has to be good for the gander. We cannot say, oh, these people are breaking the law, and then we're breaking the laws which we chose to be signatories to. You know, we have to create a pattern of transparency. So if we're going to have to process these cases, do it in a way that's more humane. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I have an immediate answer or a framework to that question. I feel bad for Joe Biden, because I would not want to be sitting in the Oval Office hearing this border crisis question over and over again. But there has to be a point where the sovereignty of the United States has to come up with a solution that follows law and which serves the humans on the side of the conversation, but also the American interests. I represent several individuals who have come to the United States through the border, and many are victims of human trafficking. The United States is the number one destination, the number one consumer of human trafficked labor, both sexual labor and commercial trafficking. The stories you hear are horrific. And is everybody trafficked through the border? No. Is it a concern? Yes. So we need to, for the sake of all of us in the United States, we need to come up with a better asylum framework so that we're not dealing with a crisis. And finally, I don't know if it's a crisis. I think that there's more accounting of the number of people who are coming in, because 20 years ago, there was no infrared technology that calculated the heat on the border to account for people who are moving through. So technology exposes surges. But I have spoken to people who have crossed the border, who live in California, and crossed the border four or five times. They would go back home for Christmas. So they cannot do that today. It's incredibly dangerous. It is difficult to go unnoticed on the border. So I think that the more we have control and the more we have security, and it has increased, even though that's not public perception, we're going to have more accounting, and that's going to give the appearance that there is a surge. And let's face it, it makes for good conversation to be talking about the border surge. No one wants to talk about, you know, a dull border. However, it needs to stop at a point in time where there is a practical, affordable, effective solution presented. And that's why we have an executive and a legislative branch to come up with that.
That's a very good way of putting it. I'm glad that you're not the Birkenstock swearing version of an immigration attorney. You make some sense. And look, I don't agree with everything that you say. But here's the thing, is that we're not going to agree on everything. And one of the biggest challenges we have in America, particularly today, is that we don't have people who are disagreeing, who are sitting here talking to each other. You know, we get into our little echo chambers and that's it. We don't actually ever talk to the other side on particular issues. And we just sit there and we insult them. And that's not what we're about here. We want to have conversations, which is why I definitely want to invite you back on.
I would love that. I'll make sure to wear Birkenstocks next time.
I knew it was coming. I do have one more question for you. But before we get to that question, I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of, you know, tell us about what you do. I know you already have, but tell us, you know, give us the commercial version of, you know, who should contact you, what are your specialties, how do they reach you, what's your number, your website, all of that good stuff.
Thank you. So my name is Renata Castro. As mentioned in the beginning, I'm the founder of Castro Legal Group. We are an immigration practice with a national presence. So we, in immigration matters, we represent individuals in visa cases from A to Z. So marriage-based, family-based immigration, all the way to exceptional ability, investors, athletes, you name it, we have a name in it. I'm a speaker in national immigration conferences. I was actually just invited for the third year in a row to speak at the conference for our trade association, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, which is a major honor. And I can be reached online at castrolegalgroup.com. Our phone number is 954-204-0393. And we have a wide presence in social media. Our Instagram is Immigrate to the USA. We post daily tips and information and breaking news. So if immigration is something of interest to you, I invite you to follow us on social media.
Very, very good. My final question for you, and this is, I think, arguably the most important one that we've asked, is I would like to get your, you know, from both a legal perspective as well as an advocate's perspective. You know, what is the difference? I guess, you know, is there a differentiation between, say, the quote unquote good legal or illegal immigrants or undocumented residents versus the bad ones, you know, the MS-13s and, you know, the ones that we hear about on Fox News or wherever, you know, is there an easy way to differentiate between those? And should we, in other words, should we be, I guess, classifying immigrants, whether legal or not, in good and bad buckets, so to speak. I hope I didn't word the question very well, but use your legal expertise to fix my botched question for me.
I think that one of the biggest challenges that I have as a lawyer is that I try not to let the profession make me jaded, because you see the best and the worst in people in general, in all walks of life. I want to continue representing humans, because that's in essence who I represent. And I want to expect the best from them. Do I believe in rehabilitation of individuals? Yes. Would I invite an ex-murderer to my house? No. I think that we have to use common sense and parameters and stop making judgment based on appearances and superficiality. Social media is not real life. What you wear doesn't make you who you are. What you look like doesn't make you what you can do. So I think the past 4 years have been incredibly taxing on all of us for every walk of life, because we just spent 4 years being incentivized to hate people. And hate is a heavy burden to carry. I think that what we can do now as people, forget politics, but as people, is to have a human conversation, a civilized conversation. And before we make judgments, you know, based on who do I think is a good or a bad person, use the same judgment that you use in your personal life. What is the moral compass that you have for people who are in your immediate circle? To me, is, are you someone who contributes to society? Are you someone who's honest? And, you know, I'm going to have a few other personal subject lines that, you know, are not going to be legally oriented. But at the end of the day, America is our home. And we want in our home people who we want to invite into our physical house. I like to say that. But how do you measure that moral compass of that person? I don't know. And have had the opportunity to interact with people who committed crimes. They just were not caught. So are we judging only those who got caught? Because there is also that. It's a philosophical question more than anything. I hope, and that's my commitment, that in the small contribution that I can make to this country, aside from paying the GDP of a small African country in taxes for the rest of my life, I just hope to be able to help the best and the brightest. And when I mean the best, I mean people who are hardworking, people who are obstinate, people who are determined, people who are, you know, honest and, you know, good friends, great chefs. I hope to bring as many people who can cook to the United States as I possibly can, because I think that that's positive for all of us. But I really want to make sure that the fabric of the United States continues to be enriched by people like me who come here with, you know, a hope and a dream, and really just want to serve this country to the best of our abilities. So that's my goal. I hope it made sense. It's a lot of rambling, very philosophical rambling, but that's my personal opinion.
Well, your answer made a lot more sense than my question did, that's for sure. And we do have, out here in Southern California, we have three very distinct and very amazing resilient steakhouses that I frequent far too often. So if you ever get a chance, if you ever fly out to
I do, actually.
John Wayne Airport, there's actually a Brazilian steakhouse right around the corner from the airport that you've got to check out. Really good.
So I'll tell you a funny story. A Brazilian steakhouse, a large one, which I will not name, has won in the past a milestone, a landmark case that said that the gauchos, you know, the man who served you the mm-hmm. meat and who cut you the meat, was a specialized position because you need to have a certain set of skills. So that's why when you go to a Brazilian steakhouse, 95% of the times, the men who are serving, the men and women, but mostly men who are serving you food, the gauchos, they are someone who came from Brazil, from the south of Brazil. That's where most of them are from. And they're considered a specialized position. That's a funny fact that you would only know from an immigration attorney.
Or a foodie like me. I knew that actually myself, but not because of the legal aspect, just because I really do love Brazilian steakhouses. Renata Castro, thank you so much for being on with us. And I would like to have you on again very soon, especially as there's breaking news about immigration or, sure. you know, I mean, I was about to say whenever it's a topic, but well, that's pretty much every day, all the time.
You're going to have a seat for me at your show if that's the case.
Exactly. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you. I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Absolutely.
We are proud to support a patriotic company that you might have heard of called MyPillow.com and its founder, Mike Lindell. You can support them too by shopping online and using promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, at checkout for up to 66% off. Or call 1-800-862-0382. So head on over to MyPillow.com now or after the show. And again, use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, at checkout to receive your discount.
I did enjoy that interview quite a lot. Obviously, I disagree with a lot of what she was saying. Okay, you know, let's be clear. But I bit my tongue. You know, I do what I need to do because I'm not out here for the ratings. I'm not here to, I mean, the ratings would be nice, but I'm not here for the sake of trying to build a name as, oh, that guy, you know, he's out there owning the libs. I think that's the phrase. You know, that's not me. You know, do I want to defeat them? Absolutely. But I want to do it from an intellectual perspective. And I take that back. That's the wrong way to put it. I want to do it from a perspective of exposing the truth. And oftentimes the way that you win this battle is not to publicly humiliate the left. You know, sometimes you just let them speak. Okay. And like I said, I mean, what Renata was saying, you know, some of the things that she said did resonate. Other things I disagreed with. But we need to know what their perspectives are. We need to give them the opportunity to speak. They don't give us, and then by they, I'm not talking about her. I'm saying the left, they generally speaking, they don't give us the opportunity to talk. They try to quash us. We've been suppressed. I'm not going to go over the growing list of places that have banned us for what? Speaking the truth? I mean, sorry, that's what I'm going to do. I don't curse. I don't dox people. I don't do anything illegal. I discuss what I believe to be the truth. It's an opinion show. So if I believe that illegal immigration is a major problem, I'm going to say that. And if I bring on a guest who believes that there are solutions to the immigration problem that aren't as right-leaning as I do, awesome. You know, so be it. Let's hear those solutions. We have to know what they're thinking in order to be able to, number one, see if we can come up with a better plan by working together. I know bipartisanship and sharing of ideas and political discourse are things that we don't embrace anymore, apparently, in the United States of America in 2021, but we need to. Does that mean that we need to go to the middle? Absolutely not. No, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not saying, hey, let's all meet in the middle and, you know, we'll all, you know, catch butterflies and paint pictures of rainbows. That's not what I'm talking about. We have to have discussions, though. And these discussions need to be sometimes heated, sometimes not. But it needs to be the two sides talking. That's what it's going to take in order to change hearts and minds in one direction or the other. Look, if their argument is more compelling than ours, so be it. We either need to come up with better arguments, or we need to perhaps make adjustments to our thinking. When it comes to immigration, I think that we have an extraordinarily solid footing to address illegal immigrants, especially when it comes to these migrant caravans that have been coming up. I mean, we're talking about a scenario here, okay? We're talking about a scenario in which the left is encouraging this. They might say that they're not, but they are. This is apparent based upon the crisis, and it is a crisis. I wasn't going to push back on Renata on that particular issue, but let's face it, it's a crisis. This isn't just, oh, we're catching them better. You know, I appreciate and I respect her opinion on that, which is why I let her say it without pushback. I don't agree. But again, this is this is my show, so I can say that after the fact. But I appreciate her greatly. Again, I cannot stress enough how important it is, how brave it is for people like her to come on this show, the equivalent of enemy territory, and to be willing to speak what she believes to be the truth and to take mild pushback from me. I'm not going to argue with people unless they want an argument. And she did not. She didn't want to argue. She wanted to have a conversation. So that's what we did. And it was very good. And I did learn some things. One thing that I did learn, I like her concept of changing the immigration policy to allow people, for instead of forcing people to come to the border, have them file for asylum quietly, anonymously, maybe not anonymously, obviously, but quietly through the consulate, through embassies. That's a good idea. I don't hear too many people. I've heard it before, but I don't hear that embraced a whole lot by the right. And I definitely don't hear it embraced a whole lot by the left. So hearing her give that perspective, that's important. That alone was worth the entire interview, because that would say, you know, you guys have a choice. Either walk 3,400 miles where the women and children are getting raped along the way. Many of them won't even make it, and then come to the border and try to sneak across, or, you know, whatever, go through the asylum process. Or why don't you just fill out your paperwork, make your case, and then we'll get you up here legally. Right? I mean, if it really is asylum, wouldn't that be the best way to do it? We'll be having more, I guess you could call them left-leaning people on the show. I enjoy it. I like talking to a diverse range of people. And I love talking to conservatives. But every now and then, it's good to spice things up. Plus, Brazilian steakhouses. If you ever come out to Orange County, look me up, and I'll take you to a nice Brazilian steakhouse. I took my brother there. He adored it. Lord willing, we will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, you guys stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee, brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru, they're then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.